Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 202 with the title, Dreams into Action. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome Janet Tangway. Janet is a powerhouse business strategist and creative catalyst who helps people turn sparks of inspiration to tangible success through visioning, connection, and inclusive entrepreneurial ecosystem. When I asked Janet to describe her superpower, she said that it is being a super connector and joy-filled cheerleader who helps others manifest their dreams. Hello, Janet. Welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. I'm guessing from the accent, you're not in the UK. Whereabouts in the world are you?
I'm in upstate New York, which is about 2.5 hours north of New York City in a town called Schenectady.
I think as we discussed in the green room, my knowledge of the US is largely north, south, east, and west. There's not a lot of granular in there. So is that rural city? Is it?
I would say suburban. So we are about 3 hours from Montreal and 3 hours from Boston. And so it's not as busy as those cities, but it's nice to be able to travel to all of them.
Yeah, no. Nip across the Canadian border for a bit of
absolutely. Yeah, I have some Canadian roots actually. Yeah, I'm part Abnaki Indian, and so I have a tribal card, and so I visit the reservation. And
wow,
yeah,
okay. Amazing. Now we didn't talk about that in the group.
I'm keen. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so you are a descendant of First Nation, are you?
Yes, Abnaki, the Abnaki tribe,
and they're presumably East Coast based. They're not.
Yes.
Not all over the...
Yeah, mostly Canada-based, but a few are in New York and Vermont. So, and that's where I grew up in Vermont, which is a state over from New York.
Wow. So you have a lot of tribal heritage and culture that you have there, is it?
I do. My great-grandmother was 100% Abnaki. And so, it's a lovely heritage. So I've been, like you said, to the reservation, to the sweat lodges, and apparently I have access to an acre of land in Canada should I ever decide to move to the reservation. So,
wow, that's fascinating. That's beautiful. I don't think I've ever met anybody with First Nation heritage before. That's great.
Okay, cool.
So we're chatting away in the green room about the fact you're a super connector and the fact you help others manifest their dreams. What first drew you to that? Where does this spark of inspiration came from? What drew you into this world?
Yeah, so for about 13 years, I helped people start new businesses. We had a chamber of commerce, and so there were lots of different people in the room, from GEDs to PhDs. And so I learned about all different kinds of cultures and ethnicities and really brought together. People all have the same dream of starting a business, and so we really all worked together, and it was about the business. And people had similar dreams. I realized that people's dreams are mostly around the same things, you know? And so I just became intrigued by it all. And I really wanted to create an inclusive, safe place where my job was just to hold space for people to be their authentic selves. And so that's where my love of this started. And then being in that classroom, every once in a while we'd have a speaker come in and I would be sitting at the table and they would say, what's your dream? Where do you want to be in 5 years in your business? And I've always had a side hustle. For a while I had an art business and I help people get into galleries and private collections and things like that. But the more I was in the class, the more I thought I really should leap off full time into something full time. And what would my dream be? And so I started saying, well, my dream is to be in a hammock more often. And so it became a running joke. And so when I decided to start my business, the class said, you should call it the Hammock Way of Life. And so that's what I did. My business is called the Hammock Way of Life because I want to be in a hammock more often. And whatever people's dreams are, I try to help them live theirs as well.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm a great believer in the Ikigai, which is the Japanese secret of a happy life, isn't it? And most people don't ever fill the fourth quadrant in, which is do something that you enjoy. You know, you get stuck into this earning a living and you never actually step out of that, do you?
I know the patterns. And I was sort of in that space, right? I'm tied into, I have to have health insurance. Health insurance is expensive here. And so I kept getting locked into, I have to have a job. Leaving my job was the best thing that I ever did. I control my own destiny now and help others live their dreams. And so it really was, it's, you know, set that fear aside and get out of patterns and routines and all that was important. And now I can help other people do that as well.
I don't think I've worked for anybody else properly since the late 90s. And I'm self-confessed unemployable now. You know, I have run business, my own businesses, but that's different. When you are running your own business with people working for you, you're still working for yourself. And even though you are a slave to your company, you still have that ultimate power to decide whether I'm going to get up today or whether I'm going to stay at home today. You can decide that. No one's going to come and knock on your door other than your customers.
Right. Customers are still, an important piece of that puzzle. And the other sort of lesson that I learned is that when you're a business owner, to work on your business, not in it. When I first started working, I was really working in my business as an employee to the customer, right? And so now it's more working on the business than in it. So trying to help, you know, make good connections and help other people. You know, I have some VAs that help me out. I have all independent contractors working with me who are so talented, designers and things like that. So I'm not as in the business as on it now.
It can take you a while though to break the relationship between the harder I work, the more I make. Sometimes you have to, as you say, have to invest your time into thinking, you invest your time into development, invest your time into marketing or networking, whatever. So when you're building your break even, you're building your cost model, you can't build 100% cost model into working all the time. You can only really work 30-40% if you're lucky.
Yes, absolutely. Two of my favorite books are The 4-Hour Work Week. Tim Ferriss, I think, wrote that book, and then Orbiting the Giant Hairball. And that's do you know that book?
No, it's a great title, though.
I love it so much. So it's about this gentleman who was at a job, and he realized that a lot of people were unhappy in their jobs, and people kept coming into his office and talking about their problems and the work that they were doing and all that. And so he kind of he created a title for himself around creativity. I'm forgetting the title right now, but he put up a little plaque on his door, and people would come in and he created this beautifully creative space for them to come and talk about their problems. He created his own kind of job for himself around creativity. He'd give them creative solutions and all of that. And so the Giant Hairball is the corporation, and he made his own path in that corporation. So, but you're right. Once you sort of embrace entrepreneurship, it is hard to go back to work for anyone else.
It's also quite scary, that leap out, though, isn't it? As you're saying, you are kind of handcuffed by your organization for healthcare, bonuses and mortgage payments, all these sort of things, and family commitments. You think, can I risk everything on black and spin the wheel and see what happens?
It takes self-belief. Often, and I think the other thing that people forget about is that you can, you know, the first few years anyway, treat it like a job. You wake up in the morning and you sort of, you know, go to work. It's not like you have your own business. You can just sit back and do nothing. You still have to network. You still have to do the accounting work or hire someone to do that. So I think it's just, you know, you have to figure things out initially. And if you believe in yourself and whatever it is your dream is and are passionate about it, and you're not doing it for someone else, right? I've seen people do it for someone else and not themselves. And that's when it usually fails.
Yeah. That's the key thing, isn't it? You've got to find that spark. If it feels like work, it's not going to succeed, is it? It's really got to feel vocational. You've got a passion for it. It's got to Because one of the sayings I've got is being self-employed or working for yourself is you can work when you want, but the flip side of that is you have to work when you don't want. So you have to take those opportunities when you can. And sometimes you go, actually, I've got to do this. I don't want to, but I've got to do this.
Right. But I'm at a point where my work feels like play. So I would do this even if I weren't getting paid for it. So I love what I do. I help other people live their dreams. And so that to me is really fulfilling. I love being a cheerleader and watching other people, you know, attain their dreams. And it always comes full circle. Somehow my dreams come true by helping other people, right? So it's really kind of cool.
I'm with you on that. I would do a lot of what I do, even if I didn't need the money, but I would do it differently. I'd be sitting here, I'd be in Malibu or something recording this podcast, not in the south of England. You know.
Right.
I'd be in the south of France. I'd have a villa somewhere. So yeah, if I had unlimited money, I might still do the podcast, but it would be on my different terms.
Different terms, right. Yeah, I hear you on that one. So yeah. And the way I've worked with clients who make those things happen, right? So I have one of the certified vision board coaches in my network. So that's what I do. I use vision boarding as a tool to help people's dreams come true. And so I get so busy with it that I have 50 right now trained and certified vision board coaches throughout the world. And so one of them decided that she wanted to travel. And so she is a photographer and she approaches resorts and says, can I do some vision boarding? And I will photograph the grounds of your property for free. And I think she has a family member who works for an airline. And so she gets some free tickets. And so she travels all around the world. She was in Costa Rica recently, and I think she's in Tulum now. So yeah, it's really kind of cool.
I know some people who do this, some of the influencers out there, they do a similar thing. They go to hotels and say, look, I'm an influencer. I've got all these Instagram followers. I'd like to come and spend some time at your resort, film it, do a little mini documentary. Would you give me free accommodation for a week? And they go, most times they go, yeah. And then they just travel around the world being an influencer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of the hotels need to fill, you know, they need to fill rooms, right? So they're open to it for the most part.
It's kind of that symbiotic relationship. And the influencer gets a great venue, somewhere to live and stay and have fun with. And the venue gets some great marketing material and some authority to, I don't know, 50, 100,000 followers or something that's going to showcase their product.
Yeah. And that's the whole point of visioning, right? That it doesn't have to be expensive. You know, if you want a new car, go test drive the car. It costs nothing to test drive a car. Or if you want a new home, go to some open houses and start really dreaming of what it would be like for you to be there and feel into it and journal about it and all of that. So, but there can be low cost things that you can do that, you know, towards your dreams.
So it's a bit like if you want to win the lottery, you have to buy a ticket, don't you?
Absolutely right. Yes. Yeah.
In other words, you've got all the hopes and dreams, but there any of the potential.
Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. That's
so. What is vision boarding? You've mentioned it a couple of times, and I've got a mental picture, but I'm not 100% sure. What is it exactly?
Sure. Sure. Well, it's sort of the way we do vision boarding is a little bit different because we bring in so many different tools around it now. So basically it's taking either if you do it tangibly with a poster board, you have poster boards and magazines and glue sticks and you sort of sort through them and see what images appeal to you and around the things that you desire in life. And if you do it digitally, you can use things like Canva or Pinterest or Mural or things like that. And so we're taking vision boarding now and using AI tools in them. We also bring in sound healers and improv actors and business model canvas. And it just depends on what the client wants. And they're really great for team building, for staff appreciation, volunteer appreciation. People really want to focus, people in jobs and people that maybe desire to be in their own business and have certain dreams, don't take the time to really focus on them. And I think that's part of the important part of what we do is that we allow people to take the time to really focus on what they want instead of just going through the grind every day.
So it's creating a visual metaphor for an aspiration, a dream, a milestone, or whatever you want to achieve. A bit like the coaching model, where are we now? We're at 5. How do we get to 10? So this is actually putting a picture against 10 or against 5. So we can say, when I have 5, my house looks like this. When I have 10, my house looks like this.
Right.
That's what I'm aiming for. So it's helping people crystallize their vision.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of neuroscience that backs it now too. So when we have skeptics, and sometimes not everyone, but you know, we've been in large engineering groups and insurance companies and things like that. They come in skeptically. Bankers, right? They maybe have seen people's dreams fall apart or something, but they come in a little bit skeptical. And so what happens is we show them that by looking at these pictures and words on a daily basis, it somehow wires your brain to be able to say, oh, this is coming to me. It's like when have you ever, purchased a new car and then you see it on the road everywhere? You never saw it before. Yes, you wanted, yes, it, right? Yes. And so it's similar, yeah, to that. So if you see it every day, somehow it manifests in your world. So keeping it at the forefront. And sometimes I forget. I've had some things manifest in very different ways. One year I put a picture of a Buddha in the middle of my board. To me, that meant slow down, do some yoga, relax more. And I was sent to China on a trip and found myself at the biggest Buddha temple in China. I'll be careful what you wish for on these boards. Another time I put a picture of a car. I couldn't find the car that I wanted, so I put a picture of a different car and I'm driving that car now. So it's funny how things manifest in very different ways.
So it's not just social media, listening to your conversations on your phone when you're chatting in the living room, and then suddenly you go onto Facebook and everything's got an advert for everything you just talked about.
That's a whole other
spooky thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny though. And
it does happen though, doesn't it? It seems to. Yeah.
It does.
But,
yeah.
I mean, it could just be this a similar sort of brain phenomenon because you just talked about it. Suddenly you notice it everywhere, as you said.
Right. Yeah. And maybe you didn't notice it. You're right. Maybe you just were saying it a lot and you didn't notice that, right? It was going to, and then showing up in your feed. Yeah. Makes it a reality. Right. So
a few years ago, I noticed that I was driving around and I was driving down this road and then I saw this street name that it was like, I don't know. I can't remember what it was. It was like David Close or something. And I'd just been talking about a David. And then suddenly I'm driving somewhere else and suddenly David there. And then there's David there. And then there's David there. And I'm thinking, is there a glitch in the matrix or something? Is something sort of, have I hit this deja vu moment where the matrix is glitched and I'm suddenly seeing everything? And
yeah, so I would say that's a sign. That's definitely follow the signs. I always say, that there's some, I follow the signs all the time, and I actually get literal signs. So some people get them on license plates, or they might see a penny or a feather or something like that. And I actually get literal signs that appear. So when I was younger, I was in the middle of transitioning from one job to another, and I wasn't sure whether to take this job. And every day on the way to the gym, there was this fish fry place, and it said "new sign coming soon," and it was up for 2 years. So the anticipation was really killing me, right? So I finally, on the day that I kind of put out the request, send me a sign if I'm supposed to take this job, the new sign came up, and it was a big sign it was a picture of a fish. And the head of the new organization that I was anticipating going to was named Fish. And so I thought that was my sign to leave the job. It was actually you'll laugh at this one. It was a job in banking. And I lasted 4 days in banking after I took that job because the first day on the job, the trainer was out. So out sick or something. And they had a different trainer come in and told us all the ways that a bank could be robbed. And so that was my first day. And then my second day was training with somebody who'd been in banking their whole life. And so I was supposed to be the manager and she came in and was outshining me. But really what put me over the edge was they were going to make me wear a sweater vest with a white shirt for the rest of my life. And I was in the parking lot crying, saying, I don't look good in sweater vests. I can't wear a sweater vest for the rest of my life. And so that's why I ended up leaving the job, because of the sweater vest.
Well, that was a sign, wasn't it?
It was a sign, yeah.
You're looking in the mirror, you're in a sweater vest going, that's not my vision.
Exactly. And it led me to this wonderful career as a business strategist and dream maker and creative catalyst. So, yeah. Yeah.
So in the show notes, and we were talking about in the green room, you've worked with people from all demographics and backgrounds, some people from marginalized communities. I guess given your heritage, of your family heritage, you work with communities that aren't within the majority often. People's visions must be different. Not everybody wants to be a millionaire, do they?
Yeah.
Some people want health or happiness.
That's such an important point. So, I've learned lots of lessons over the years. And I think the one that for me was the most just telling and that I really became sensitive to was we were working in an organization with the staff of an organization that helped the unhoused. And so we went into it, and I always bring lots of travel magazines into these workshops and glorious houses and, you know, all sorts of things, Architectural Digest and you know, Condé Nast travel magazines. And so what happened at the end of it was that when they shared their vision boards, they were showing pictures of food and pictures of chairs and couches and things from the furniture magazines, but there was no travel anywhere on any of the boards. The travel magazine sat untouched. And so from that point forward, I really made an effort to know my audience and dive deeper into who are these people and what are their dreams and goals before I enter the room. Just like we did, you talked to me before I came on the podcast, right? Sort of take a deeper dive and always know who my audience is. So we've worked with neurodiverse communities. We've worked with LGBTQ+ communities. We've worked. One of the things that I bring into some of the places that I work with, instead of poster board, I bring in cake boxes, because not everyone wants to share their dreams with people, so that people can show what they want to show through the clear top of the cake box and then not show whatever else. It's also three-dimensional, so they can put different things in there. And we've worked with, the formerly incarcerated, currently incarcerated, and then high net worth women. So it's really across the board. Again, everyone has some sort of dreams, but their dream, you're absolutely right. The dreams are different for different. The messages that came through on one of the boards, we worked with a group of teens during the pandemic, and they were in the foster care system. And they put lots of pictures of fashion and fast cars and, you know, it was mostly boys. And when it came time for them to share their boards in very, very, very tiny print, it said, "I survived my childhood." And I don't think his peers saw it, but certainly the leaders in the group and I saw it. Again, it was virtual, so it was, I had a chance to see it up close where maybe other people didn't. And so, again, in really impactful work when you see messaging coming through like that.
As you're speaking now, I'm thinking this is like a very visual representation of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, isn't it? This is when you're actually doing holidays and aspirational type dreams, you're right at the top of that self-actualization. Whereas if you've got pictures of food, safety, you're right there. And that's a real indication of where these people are in their lives.
Absolutely. And
really gives you an insight as to how you can motivate them, how you can talk to them, how to communicate. Because you've right, you've got to read the room. And this vision board allows you to really see where people are at, and then you can meet them there. That's really powerful.
We've had all sorts of, opportunity to work with people. And people with an ability difference, right? You have to make sure that they can access whatever it is you're bringing, poster board that they can reach if it, you know, and all of that. So we, like I said, we've learned lots of lessons. And also to bring in, I really want people to see themselves in the magazines that I bring. So to find magazines so that people can see themselves in all ways is can be challenging, right? So sometimes I have them bring their own photos, but I chase magazines far and wide to try to make sure that I get them from all places. And now I'm seeing a little bit on, you know, Amazon has books to specifically for, you know, people of color and certain, you know, demographics. You can find specific vision boarding books just for other people. So, yeah.
Of course, you've got tools like Canva and other platforms where you could probably generate imagery.
Absolutely. And virtually it's easier.
Like well. Yeah, it is. Yeah. AI can generate some stuff as well for you now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes I bring loose, sometimes I create those in advance and I'll print them out just from, you know, so that I bring loose images. It doesn't always have to come from a magazine. Magazines are hard to find these days. They're expensive on the newsstand. I got lucky because my nephew works for a magazine company. So sometimes I get them from him, but yeah.
Yeah, I suppose things like dentists and doctors, they... cleared all the coffee tables away during COVID and never put them back.
They did. It's really true. Yeah. Libraries sometimes give them away at the end. And there's a few places out there. And again, we make an effort to go into certain groups. Associations sometimes have magazines for their members. And so we make a wide effort to reach out.
Yeah. We went digital quite quickly, didn't we?
But we did.
As soon as we couldn't give a magazine out, we stopped doing them. Yeah. Again, going back to the way you're engaging with some of the, I hate the word marginalized communities. That sounds so crass, doesn't it? It's not what I'm trying to say. You know, people who are voiceless, unheard, people who maybe don't have the same opportunities as others. What is it about, I was going to say them, I mean, that again is stereotyping, it is creating a group. What are common paths that come out? You talked about that their needs and their visions are more day-to-day, more immediate. But what are the common themes in terms of their hopes and aspirations then? Is there a common theme that comes out?
Yeah, I think family is really important to them, whatever family means to them, and, you know, different kinds of families, right? And I will say, you know, money usually makes the board because most of us need a little bit of that to survive no matter what it is. The amounts are different. I sometimes have them put amounts, everyone, when I say them, all of my clients put amounts of money. So I get specific with them, and it is very different for different groups. Some people are putting millions and some people are putting thousands and hundreds, right? So that stands out sometimes. Health is also something that I think is pretty common for everyone. It's a common. So those three things would be similar.
I was glancing through your show notes and what you wrote earlier, and a little bit at the bottom just snuck in there. You own a record label.
I do. Yeah, I just started one. It's Tanguay Productions, and I produced my first record called Smell the Rain with Jay Arael and Robert Frederick. Bob knew I had a dream of, I write lyrics, and he knew that was one of my dreams, and he's a musician, and he said, you want to just play around and see what we come up with? And so he helped me write the first version of it. And then I wanted it to be a little more R&B. And so we brought in Jay Arael, and she beautifully put something together. And we have this beautiful record now called Smell the Rain. And my second record is in the works. And if I could describe it to you, it is almost dueling instruments. So starting out chaotic and then becoming something beautiful at the end, which is kind of, I'm hoping, where our world is going right now. I don't love it that we're in chaos, but I'm hoping it anyway. So that's sort of the theory of it. And so we're bringing together lots of different musicians to do that.
Is that a bit like Devil Came Down to Georgia? Sort of like you got the violin and sort of like giving it a bit of a duel or something. Yeah. Bit of a violin going on, bit of a drums.
A call and response sort of thing, right? That starts out maybe as an argument and, you know, not nice. And then, but the what we're trying to work out right now is, will people even listen if we start out in chaos, right? So we're not quite sure about it, but it's evolving. So, yeah.
I listen to a lot of puppy music. So we've got a young puppy, and we found all these playlists on Apple Music. So we create all this playlist of puppy music, you know, with fireworks in it and all these anti-anxiety tracks. And I've listened to some really kind of, it's actually more like spa music. It's really nice.
You know,
we even play it at night now. It's great. So I can imagine some of the things you're talking about there would fit well into this sort of puppy music. So yeah, maybe you don't need humans to listen to this. Maybe you could find an outlet.
I love that. I'm going to go listen to puppy music. That's great. I love that. Thank you.
You wouldn't believe how many albums there are about puppy music. Anti-anxiety this, anti-anxiety that. I mean, there's one artist that has like, I don't know, 40 albums and playlists and things. And it's like, it's fascinating.
It doesn't work the same way for cats. I'm more of a cat person. So does it work the same way for cats?
As a puppy owner and not a cat owner, I've never searched for cats. You might find there's one for budgerigars and cockatoos and fish.
That's great. I love it. Inclusive music for all animals.
So, I mean, you talk about owning a record label. Tell me a bit more about this, because I've just seen the Bruce Springsteen movie, and
I did too.
He's in a recording studio, so I've got this image of an 8-track, or him ideating in his hotel room. He's got his little echo machine on, and then they're in the studio, and they've got all these people in this. Yeah. A traditional, is that what you've got? You've got one
it's
of those,
exactly
you've got
right. It's exactly right. In fact, I had to look really closely to see, is that the studio that we you know, produced the music in? It was that similar. So yeah, the engineers are who puts it together in the end. So you have this vision, and it's a lot of iterations. It was a creative process, which I loved. Again, I wear lots of creative hats. I'm a mixed media artist and an author. But this music for me was so fun to put together, because I play a little bit of piano and I understand a little bit of music, but I really needed a lot of musicians to help me. It was so collaborative, and I didn't know all the players. So sometimes the engineer would recommend somebody in their network, and we'd bring in a saxophonist and they weren't quite understanding what I was trying to do. And so the second one just got it right. And so, yeah, so it was really a creative process to get everybody on board to understand the vision of what I wanted it to be in the end. So it was, you know, and it's always one of these things when you're an artist, when is it ready? Is it ever finished? Right. So there's always one more thing that you could do, but when it's ready and you can ask, you know, Amazon Music or Spotify to play it, it's pretty cool.
I love that. If I said, sort of put some things on my vision board, I would have a saxophone on there somewhere, because that's always been an instrument I thought it'd be really cool to play something, you know, don't play a lot, just maybe the riff out of Baker Street or something like that. Just something out of that. Just so you can, you're at a party, you're with a load of friends and there's a sax in the corner. You say, do you mind? Can I? And they go, yeah, sure, whatever. And you blast out a bit of that and go, thanks, and just put it down and walk away and just leave everybody in silence.
It's really true. So that's funny that you say that, because I started out playing piano. And so it was pretty easy to translate the notes to the saxophone. The hard part when you don't play a wind instrument is the mouthpiece, right? To yeah. learn all of that was more difficult for me. So So I loved playing it. I knew I was playing the correct notes, but getting the breath work right and all that was the biggest challenge. Do you play any other?
No, I don't. No, I learned, my granddad taught me Three Blind Mice on the piano and Bar Bar Black Sheep. Only about, so I'm being very visual here. This is an audio podcast. I only learned about 10 or 15 notes, you know, ding, 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 ding. And if ever I see a piano in a shopping center or something like that, I go and do Three Blind Mice or I do Bar Bar Black Sheep. Like, that's it. That's me. Yeah, I'm not musical at all. It didn't trigger in my brain as something that I could learn. I tried the recorder, and like everybody does at school.
Recorder, right.
Never progressed past London's Burning. I don't know if you did that in the States.
Right. Yeah. So I live with musical instruments. I have a xylophone and drums and Tibetan bowls. And so they're always here when I need sound just to play a little bit of it. So I don't know that you absolutely need to be a musician to do that stuff. It just, I love music. And
I think you said earlier, you know, what would you do if you would you carry on doing what you do if you didn't need to work? And I think I'd love the opportunity to explore my lack of musicality and become a bit more musical. Yeah. You know?
That's great.
Yeah. I heard once someone say that everybody can learn to sing. And I'd like to prove them wrong. I can't. or prove myself wrong. I can, you know.
I agree. Everyone has a creative bone, right? Everyone has creativity in them. It's just a matter of drawing it out. I trained as an expressive artist at Glass Lake Studio, which is affiliated with the European Graduate School in Saas-Fee, Switzerland, and just learned all sorts of things about myself and how we're all really creative, you know, and we get stuck in that, oh, I have to do things a certain way. And so you really don't. You can close your eyes and draw with your non-dominant hand and you're going to make something, and then, you know, can evolve into something wonderful. So, yeah.
Yeah. We mentioned Ikigai earlier and finding what you love. And I suppose what I found was that I had this inner, I wanted to be a rock star, Suzy Quatro or something like that. But, you know, back in my youth, I wanted to be on there with tight leathers, guitar, really strumming it out. I was a big fan of people like David Coverdale and the Deep Purple and those sort of rock bands of the 70s, 80s. I think I always wanted to be that person, but I didn't play the instrument, didn't sing, I wasn't really musical. I was probably more too into computers and logic than I was creativity. But then I found professional speaking and standing on stage. And it suddenly really tweaked on me. I've got a microphone in my hand or clipped to my lapel. I've now got an audience. I'm now wooing people. They're leaning in and they're excited. I've got fangirls out there and fanboys out there. And this, I thought, wow, I've found my stage in a different way. And it's,
that's great. Yeah, so next time you're there, maybe sing a tune, right? Just test the waters right now.
I do karaoke. And yeah, it's, I'm one of these people that doesn't mind singing. I've got no problem singing. It's just whether you've got a problem listening is the issue.
That's funny. Well, that's what I mean. I think that's the message in this. I'm in the same boat. I can't even sing the happy birthday song correctly and on a record label, right? So I don't think it matters. It's whatever you hear and whatever you want to build and create. And so you don't have to be the one to do the actual work sometimes.
Yeah. So tell me more about the work you do. Let's dive a bit deeper into what brings you joy and happiness, you know, the super connector stuff and the way you built your business up and getting funding for everybody. Dive a bit deeper in that.
Yeah. So I love building bridges between people, between all sorts of people, right? I just see sometimes when I meet with people, I'm like, oh, they could benefit from that. Some people don't like to do that. Some people, when I sometimes ask for connections, some people just like, no, they're in my world and you can't have them, right? Whatever. And so right? They're all mine. I'm not like that. I like to share my ideas, my thoughts, my friends, you know, if I can help somebody else in some way connect with someone who might benefit them, we're all better for it. So that's what I love to do. And I'm a visionary. I'm not so good at the details sometimes, I will say. I need to surround myself with people that are really good with details because I can see the big picture. And sometimes I need help with those details. So I do something called circle of influence or mind mapping or treasure mapping, they call it. And that helps me visually figure out where my networks are and how I can connect different people. They say sometimes, do you know who Kevin Bacon is? Do you know that actor?
Well, the actor, yeah. The guy that went bust and ended up doing TV adverts.
Maybe, yeah. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, they say. So sometimes in my networks, they say 6 degrees of Janet Tangway. So I like to be able to connect people. And I like to play that game. How many people till I can connect with this other person, right? So, but that's what I love to do. And I think it helps people. And like I said, it somehow always comes back to me, that's not my intention. But lately, the older I get, I notice that happens more often.
When you talk about the 6 degrees of separation and those sort of things, I mean, I knew someone really well who knew Boris Johnson. If you know Boris Johnson, then Boris Johnson knows Barack Obama, knows right. This person, knows that person. So it's quite tenuous to say I'm three removed from Barack Obama because there's no way I could get a message from person B to person C to person D, even though I'm at 6 degrees of separation. I've got no influence in that sphere. So it's trying to work out. It's not just your connection or potential connections. It's your actual credibility of connections. And that's the hard bit.
Yeah. And it's also not, I mean, I think one of the things that's really important is to not use those connection for personal gain, right? Like it's genuine. Yeah, like somebody wants to connect me because they know I'm going to take care of that relationship and not take advantage of it, right? So my hair stylist won an Oscar for the movie The Whale. And so she knows a lot of actors, but I'm not going to take advantage of that, you know, because our relationship is more important to me than whatever it is this other relationship is, right? So it's nurturing.
Talking makeup artists, I did a TV documentary in the UK, and documentary, we had a photo shoot towards the end, and they hired an MUA, and it later transpired that my MUA on the day is this personal stylist for Joan Collins. And he often posts pictures of himself with Joan Collins on his Instagram and everything else. And I thought, wow, you know, my stylist does Joan Collins as well. That's kind of a...
It depends on what's important to you. Sometimes people in my network, they don't care. Like if they're not into the movies, they don't really care, right? About that stuff. So, but if people, you know, like film and video and all that, then they care about it. So it really depends on, you know, what's important. Maybe a sports figure would be more important, right? So, yeah.
I think it's nice to know people who know people as well. It's because they have stories. They have depth in their life. I mean, I'm always fascinated to meet people and hear what's going on in their life. And I'm one of the people that will go to a conference. And I'll spend all the time talking to people who are doing the waiting or the serving the food or clearing up and so on.
Yes.
And I have chats with them and they're looking at me, why are you talking to me for? I said, well, because you're probably more interesting than half the people in the room.
Absolutely. Yeah. Get to know people. Those are the people with, interesting stories. And 100%.
There's one conference I went to and they'd hired some graffiti artists and they created a graffiti wall. And it wasn't just random words or anything like that. It was basically spray. They had a plan. And what they did is you could go out there and grab your spray can and fill in some segments or some gaps. And I just spent hours talking to these graffiti artists about their life and how they are proper London graffiti artists who spray walls and do all these sort of things. and really get to know about their tags and their networks and all this. And they'll show me their Instagram and all the work they're doing.
Have you had them on the podcast?
I can't wait for that conference. I was fascinated with all this stuff. Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah.
That's great.
And I think my talk in the day was later on, and I was on stage. And I referred to, I think I talked to people. So how many people in this room talk to people they don't know? How many people talk to people who are different to them? I said, how many people have had a conversation with a graffiti artist? Everyone's like, no. I said, I did. They're fascinating, absolutely fascinating people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you learn. That's how you you evolve, is by learning from other people and other, right? Yeah, I agree.
But we get stuck in our little bubbles, don't we? And this is the issue. You know, you're talking about being the super connector, linking people from different cultures and generations. And you can only do that if you're interested in people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sitting at a conference with people that might not look like you, right? Or again, just even in your day-to-day routine, going to a different coffee shop every day, going to a different part of town and, you know, parking somewhere different and, you know, exercising in a different gym or whatever. Just getting to know people from a different perspective is, to me, it's enlightening. It's refreshing. It makes me a better person just by, you know, understanding who's around me.
I like to play with my own biases sometimes. And if I walk into a coffee shop or I walk into a restaurant or sitting on a bus or a train, something goes into my head saying, I don't want to sit next to that person. I want to sit next to this person. I almost test myself and go, why don't I want to sit next to them? What is wrong, or what have I decided isn't right about that person? And I play with myself and go, okay, I've got a bias. I've clearly decided in my head where right and wrong is. I play with it. I don't necessarily change my mind, but I want to challenge myself as to why I did that.
I love that. Yeah, because we all have implicit bias, no matter if we think we don't, right? So I love that. I'm going to play with that now too, if you don't mind. I'm going to see
what
happens next time in that situation.
And I found myself making different choices, you know, sitting in a restaurant, you know, at a conference, you know, I will seek out someone who's sat on their own, or I'll seek out some random person who, and I just go, I would never have a conversation with you. Just, hi, how are you? Just, I often start the same way. Which part of the world are you from? How is it taking you far to travel today? It's a really easy question that anyone can answer.
Yeah.
And then just see what happens.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been doing a lot of virtual work lately because I'm connecting with people internationally more, and I'm attending these networking groups, and they put you into little smaller groups. And I keep finding with many of them that I'm ending up with women my age who wear glasses, right? And so
here we are again.
I know, right? That's true. It's true. And so, and I'm delighted to be here. But in those groups, I'm wondering, the more I'm in them, if they're putting us together on purpose, because I would love to meet other people that don't necessarily look like me, right? And so, fine with the way I look. I just would like to meet a lot of different people. And so it's curious to me about whether it is really random and they're just pushing a button and we're ending in the rooms together, or they're putting demographics together. So as I explore that further, I'm going to dive deeper and talk to the leaders to find out how that's done.
You need a pink wig or something. You can sort of...
There you go. Show up in disguise next time. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
A Groucho mask, marks, glasses, and moustache, and something. Just a little cigar going.
Why do I do these things? So this is good. This is a good suggestion. So.
Crazy lady in room three.
Right. Yeah, I love that. It's wonderful.
But I mean, since I did transition, what, 10, 12 years ago, and I've met far more real people than I've ever met in my life before. I don't know if it's me, I don't know if it's them, but I just attract people who are different these days. And
great.
It's a fantastic world.
Yeah. The first job I ever had was working for a transgender woman, and it was wonderful. And this was in the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Really, really great experience.
A real elder of the community.
Out. And yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And taught me so much. I was working in film and video at the time, and learned a tremendous amount about it. I'm not technical at all, by the way, so we could be collaborative, because I'm technically challenged, but I did learn a lot, and it was a great experience. And so, yeah.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, it's wild sometimes. I think in my old life, I just went safe. I just went easy. I just, as you say, that affinity bias, that kind of implicit bias we have about people who are different to ourselves, it's like, and I think maybe it's the marginalization that you experience yourself. You become kindred spirits with other people who are.
Yeah, yeah, that could be.
Rejected by society, for want of a better phrase.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just not listening to other people, you know. I always give the example of, you know, my mom when I was growing up, loved country music. And so every time Barbara Streisand came on the radio, she'd say, she's screechy, whoop, and she would change the radio, right? Change the station. And so makes beautiful music, which I learned as an adult, right? Somebody said, no, you need to sit down and listen. She's beautiful. It's beautiful. And so listen to every single album. and so just, you know, not believing what other people say and just getting to know people is so important, because if you take the time, it's really taking the time to get to know people. You learn so much.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? When you live to our age, my old age was 60s, a lot of our childhood artists are now passing away. And I can't remember, a chap yesterday passed away, wasn't there? The black singer, an actor, I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But you suddenly become rekindling their relationship with these singers the day they pass away. I wish I'd got into them. I should have been into them earlier and really enjoyed their music. But it takes their passing for you to be reminded of it.
Reminded, right? Yeah, because we're just all so busy. And I think that's part of it, too. People are just busy in their own, again, routines and patterns, that they're not getting out of their comfort zone to go meet other people. And
And Taylor Swift knocking out music every day. So you've got to keep up with her catalogue these days.
It's not easy.
To chuck out 20 tracks on a Sunday night or something, got to absorb those. Yeah. I can't keep up with the 70s anymore. But I discovered Barry Manilow probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I was going through this, I wouldn't say melancholy phase, but just a real deep sort of kind of, and I just started listening to Barry Manilow and I thought, wow, there's some really great stuff in here. And, 20 years ago, I would have gone, Barry Manilow, not going near that.
My whole teen angst period was all about Barry Manilow. So I think I know every song that he ever wrote. Yeah.
And some of them are really, really deep. And some of the vocals and some of the words, I think, it's incredibly powerful words. I think we lose a lot of that sometimes. You know, we're too busy dancing to it or doing whatever we're doing. Not enough to just put your headphones in and on and just
to listen to the words. Yeah. The lyrics are so important sometimes, but you're right. Other things, you know, shine brighter.
Yeah. I suppose having a new puppy, I've got an opportunity now just to generally just go for random playlists on Apple. And I just say the mix, that today's mix or whatever it is, and some of it's modern, some of it's old, but yeah, it's really nice to just get hit with something different. And because I think that's the difference between music you pick and then radio you get what they give you, and that's very eclectic sometimes. Obviously the DJ is going to put their eclectic mix on whatever their genre is, but sometimes you hear songs you haven't heard for years, and I think, you know, listen to a popular music that covers our age group, you know, whatever that may be. You get a broad range from the 60s all the way through to the current. And I think it's lovely to get that randomness. So what's the top of your vision board right now then?
It's global influencer. So, it's funny because I don't like to be on stages like you. I don't have a podcast and I don't speak in front of people. And so, but I do write and I do things in my own way. And I feel like I have some messaging. So I am writing my memoir and it has some funny stories in there about my childhood and lessons learned. And it's about business and dreams and all of that. So I really I want to learn about other cultures in a much deeper way. So that's my next iteration.
That's the what and the why is the joy is.
Yeah. 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 And joy, you asked what was at the top of my board. The word joy is at the top of my board also. So I want to always have that around me. Yeah.
And what's the picture of?
It's joy. The word. The joy
just
is
the
word.
Just the word.
Joy is a word. Yeah, I'm a word. I'm trying to think if I have pictures are typically travel. That's what I have on the board for pictures of places. But for other things, I have mostly words and affirmations and things like that.
It's strange. I was asking you that question and saying, what's your picture at the top? I was thinking, what's my picture at the top of my board? I've no idea. I've often used the word freedom as a goal. And what I mean by freedom is freedom, a choice to choose about whatever I want. So enough, sufficient money, sufficient wealth, sufficient family, sufficient whatever it may be, so that I have freedom of choice to do whatever I want to do. And I think that's probably the word I'm looking for. And that's not gluttony. That's sufficiency based.
Absolutely. So I'd be curious to see what image you could find to represent that. I mean, words are fine. You can do words or images, but I would be curious to know what images you could find around that word.
I was used to talk about, and this is a part of my life, I suppose. I used three zones. One was a cage, one was a safari park, and one was the Serengeti in Africa. And it was about not living in a cage, living by somebody else's permission, doing as you're told. You have no agency, no nothing. And I didn't want to be in the wild where I was under threat from having to find my own food and alligators and being eaten, all this kind of stuff. I wanted to find a safari park where I was living with other creatures within the bounds of a rule set, fences, but there was no dangerous animals in there. People would come and feed me. I had sufficient this. And I would never be dragged off into the cage or never be thrown out into the dark. So the safari park was my model of how I wanted to exist in the world. Know the rules, know the limits, know the boundaries, but never find the fence. You know they're there somewhere. So that's my definition of freedom, really, is not living in the cage by someone else's permission and not being anarchic and living in the wild.
Right, right, right. But interesting that there is a fence there at all. So you're not living
Good fences make good neighbors, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you live in a society that has rules and rule sets, which are the fences. But if the rules don't impact me, because I'm quite happy to stay with it, as long as I stay within 6 feet inside the fence, I never notice the fence. Because when I want to push them, they don't work for me. So if I can find a safari park where I don't notice the fences, that's got to be freedom, isn't it?
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
I think so. That's a memory I had, you know, going through difficult times in my life where I was, I suppose, living by other people's permission, other people's rule sets, other people's control, and being told what I could and couldn't do. And I think that's why I've written a blog about it, finding my safari park. And that's what it's about. Yeah. Finding that place where I can live without being answerable on a day by day basis, just understand the rules.
I would love to see a vision board around this.
Yeah.
Just having that vision, seeing it visually, you know?
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe. I've got lots of blogs. So
okay.
Maybe what I'll do is I'll feed them into AI and say, make sense of that, please.
Absolutely. Come up with the images there. I love that.
Yeah. But yeah, I've never really got into the vision board thing, but now we have this great conversation. I'm going to definitely, Well, I think I'll do it with my business first, because my wife is my business partner and we've actually got planning sessions scheduled in for Friday to talk about our marketing goals and where we're going to take things. So that's probably a good idea to...
So I'm going to give you another little secret tool that I use in my vision boarding that I think you would have fun with since you like music, is that I use an app called Suno. There's another one called Create. And when you're finished with your vision or your board in some way, you ask Suno to pick a genre and then put your dream in there, whatever it is, and it creates a beautiful song about your vision. And it's really fun.
Oh, okay. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Suno. S-U-N-O.
S-U-N-O. Yeah. Yeah. And again, there may be other apps, but that's the one I really like a lot. And people are blown away when they, at the end of my vision board sessions, when they have this song created for them around their vision. So there's other AI tools that we're using now too, so that are really, really fun. Putting your own images into the vision board and all sorts of things.
Oh, I just keyed it into Google and someone cheated and inserted a paid ad hoc top call, which wasn't Suno. So yeah, Suno.com.
Okay, Suno.
Make a house song about quitting your job.
Yeah, right, exactly. Anything you want. Yeah, yeah. It's really, really fun. I do it for friends for their birthdays and things like that. And so you can create, the more you put, the better language you put in, the better the song is coming out. So take some time with it and you can really create some fun things.
Oh, I just found something really cool in it. You can separate the stems as well. I often go to Epidemic Sounds and find these tunes and then just strip out the drum track, because I really love just the tribalism of drums playing away.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could definitely come up with something and then just strip out the drums.
You're so technical. You're right to the technology. That's great.
Yeah. Beautiful. Right. I've got something to play with now. I'm going to feed my blog into that later.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Jan, it's been amazing. We could yak on for hours, I'm sure. And it's a good job I'm not too close to you. Otherwise, I'd be driving up and spending an afternoon chatting
away
as well.
Anytime you're here, feel free to just stop by. So it's been a pleasure.
So how can our listener get hold of you?
Sure. So my website is hammockwayoflife.com. And I'm on Amazon under my name, Janet Tangway. You can find all my books there. I just created a new journal there about visioning. I'm on LinkedIn as Jazzy Jan, and on Facebook and Instagram as Hammock Way of Life as well. Watch for my books, Unstoppable Women in Business. There's an anthology. I have a chapter in that book. I have a chapter in Inspiration to Success. Excuse me. And the new book is going to be called Hammock Way of Life. It's my memoir.
Love that. I'm gonna look that up now. And Tangway is spelled TANGUAY for anyone who is looking to find you. Or Jazzy Jan sounds easier.
Jazzy Jan is easier. Yes, yes. But Janet Tangway is on Amazon. And I have some children's books too. One of them is about being who you want to be when you grow up. It's called BB. That one might also be relevant too. And the other one is called Dust Bunnies Don't Eat Carrots. But you have to order that one from my website.
I love that.
It's about big names.
I love that. Maybe I need to read that children's book because I still haven't figured out who I want to be when I grow up. I'm still working on
that. We all haven't. I think sometimes we all haven't, right? We're all in growth mode.
Janet, it's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
I agree. This is fun.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.